Welcome to Former Passion, episode 57. Want to apologize at the top of this. This one's coming out a couple days late. Just scheduling issues all around, but you know, but you're here now, and that's what matters. Our next episode as well is going to be an in-person one, and as opposed to coming out on the 17th, it's going to come out a day later. So, you know, if for whatever reason you're, you know, watching your clock on when these come out, notice that that one will also be a little bit off schedule, but we'll be back to our regular schedule next month. I'm going to read off our recent Patreon subscribers at the top of this episode. If this is your first time here, we have a Patreon feed that gives you an additional episode in addition to the two episodes that come out each month. That's going to come out on the last Friday of the month. It's a bit of a different format than our regular interview process. It's more discussion-based. We'll have like a myriad of guests on. And they're fun. Just, you know, a lot of different topics going on over there. It's $2 a month. You have access to all the new ones that come out, and you'll have access to every single Patreon episode that has already come out. That's going to be at www.patreon.com/forumofpassion. And we read the names of the new subscribers at the top of each main feed episode. So for this week's, we've got Grady Allen, Patrick Maloney, Blaine Webster edited his pledge to $5. Thank you very much, Blaine. Joshua Payne, somebody that just goes by the name of Junkhead. So shouts you out. Caius Garber, Lucky Hunter of Abuse of Power, Criminal Instincts, at some point in time. Memory Screen, Atlanta guy, shout him out, great dude. Marquise, this might be Keese from New York, I'm not sure. If it's you, shout out. And somebody just going by the name Cheese Sauce. And
shout out cheese sauce.
And then last but not least, just somebody going by the name of Sam. Appreciate each and every one of y'all. Today, you've heard a little bit of him in the background there. We have on somebody that, I mean, this is not an opinion, this is fact, that has defined the sound for heavy hardcore, heavy music in this era. Most stuff of that nature, that if you're hearing it out there, you know, in the ether, you know, chances are a good ratio of it has been touched by this man. You know, he's in the studio, out of the studio, on the stage, really a jack of all trades and a master of those trades as well. Mr. Taylor Young, how you doing, sir?
That was so nice.
No, I mean it.
Wow.
I mean it, dude.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's been a while since we've seen each other. How you been doing?
I'm all right. Staying busy.
Yeah. I mean,
my fingers warm.
I can tell. I imagine you're very booked up for many different things all the time.
I have. Yeah. It's like a combination of between doing bands and recordings, but yeah, it's pretty fucking hectic.
Do you, be it that this is like your profession, like recording and doing music, your day to day, are you like setting do you set aside like a certain number of hours, or is it just kind of like you take it kind of like as the day comes, kind of like what's your regular schedule like?
Usually it's kind of like recordings come first, just because that's my actual job.
Right.
So, you know, when there are recordings, it's usually a 10 a.m. start time and just kind of a normal day job situation. You know, we usually do like 10 to 8 or something like that.
Okay.
And then if I have days where I'm not working, it's either kind of decompressing my brain from the last record, or if I'm feeling like writing, I'll write, or if, you know, working around shows or something like that. It's kind of different every week.
Sure. Oh, that sounds great, because you're not doing the same thing every day.
Yeah, it's definitely, it varies a good bit.
How many projects at a time would you say that you're working on now?
Right now, there's maybe like three active things that I'm like just writing for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's none. Honestly, sometimes it feels like I'm in zero band. Sometimes it feels like I'm in a fucking 100.
Oh, I mean, I wasn't even talking about writing. I'm talking about
recording.
Yeah.
Right now I can actually just pull it up cause I'm at my computer.
I'm curious.
I just wrapped something yesterday.
Okay.
But I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things in progress.
Okay. Is that regular or is that like a high or low number for usual?
Honestly, it might be low.
Okay.
But a couple of them, about 3 of them have been kind of floating around for like 2 years at this point.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, your studio, Van Nuys, California, correct?
Yes.
And I know that, you know, like I attribute you to Van Nuys, but you're originally from Connecticut, right?
Correct.
Be it this is almost like a two-part of a series, be it that I spoke to your brother in the previous episode.
Yeah, you got a lot of that info.
Yeah. But something that I noticed when talking to him is that I feel like y'all's trajectories ended up linking up eventually, but from his perspective, it almost seemed like it was like y'all's journeys were kind of separate up until maybe later.
A little bit, yeah. Like he didn't start playing music until I was, I guess I was like 19 or 20.
Okay, see, exactly. So you've got at that point you got a couple decades under your belt. You've been doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You guys are originally from New Haven?
So we initially lived in Bristol, which is also Hartford County, and then eventually moved to, we bounced between two houses because our parents were separated, in West Hartford and Hartford, which are like kind of polar opposites.
Okay. Be it as somebody that oddly living on this coast has not been to Connecticut, but a couple times, what's the difference between the two?
So, I mean, Hartford is, you've been to Albany?
Yes.
Hartford feels like Albany, which is kind of why I attribute myself liking like Troy Core and shit so much, because it just kind of feels the same. Okay. And then West Hartford is just like the quintessential suburb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So you got a bit, you know, that mix.
Yeah.
In there, environment wise. When did you, I mean, be it you're for someone that plays a bunch of different instruments, when did you start playing music?
Probably like third grade, I started playing drums.
Okay.
Just because there was a kit around. And then had a band, like a band that didn't do anything, but like we had a quote unquote band in like fifth grade, where me and my other friend would just, you know, goof around and write songs.
Where did you said like the drum set was like around? Was that just like something that your family had?
Yeah, my dad had one set up. He's a musician, and my mom is as well. And she plays piano, and he played drums.
Okay.
And they would just kind of jam sometimes.
I was going to ask, did he ever or she ever like play in any bands, or was it just strictly like, this is like a hobby that we just do on our own?
She was kind of like raised Catholic piano player, so she didn't really like, she's always played with people, but I don't think she's ever played like a show. She also played church piano for a really long time.
Got it.
And then my dad definitely had bands when he lived in the South, and his sisters were always dating people in bands, or they would date the people in his bands. It's kind of funny. My aunt actually dated one of the singers of COC at one point.
Oh shit. Okay. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, is he originally from North Carolina?
Yes. I was born in North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah.
Where in North Carolina?
So, Raleigh.
Oh dude. And that's where my dad lives.
Oh yeah. My dad floats between North Carolina and Texas currently.
I had no idea, dude. Wow.
Yeah, it's a completely Southern family. Colin is the only one who's like Connecticut born and bred. Like he was born in Bristol, and like has, I mean, I only lived in North Carolina until I was maybe two. Mm-hmm. But we would go visit family, and all our family is Southern.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Dang. What? So they move up there when you're two. What brought them from North Carolina up to Connecticut?
My dad got a job at ESPN, which is it's in Bristol, Connecticut.
I had no idea. Wait, you said your aunt dated somebody in a singer at COC?
Yeah, she dated Simon Bob Sinister, the dude who sang on Technocracy.
Ah, okay. So one of the earlier ones. Got it. I was like, I had to compare. I was curious.
Oh yeah, it's just the dude that sang on that one EP. And that's it.
So you start playing drums. What's like the first stuff that you're playing? You know, like what were you into musically at the time?
I mean, I loved Sepultura and shit like that. And I, before I was even interested in playing, I was already listening to Hatebreed and shit. So that was definitely the initial sound goal. I guess actually third grade is even before that. I don't know. How old are you in third grade?
Like eight.
Eight. So yeah, that was 95. Then I maybe listened to Sepultura at the time, and my dad had Black Sabbath tapes and shit. So I always liked guitar music to some degree.
How did you come across Sepultura at that age?
We have an older brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his friends, all like that shit. He went to high school with like that dude Chauncey, and I don't know if you know Ben Grippo, but he has a younger brother, Matt Grippo.
Okay.
That's my brother's age. And he just kind of, he hung around them a little bit in high school. He played basketball, and I think everybody was just kind of friends in their school to a degree, but he would go to like Wu-Tang shows with them and Rage Against the Machine and shit like that.
Okay. So he just put you onto the same stuff that he was listening to?
Kinda, or what they were listening to. Yeah.
Did he ever get into playing, or is it just fandom?
No, he's a creative dude, but it was never music for him. He loves music, but it's he got more into film and stuff after he got finished with basketball.
Okay. So you're being like raised on heavy music just off the jump.
Yeah, so my dad liked like Tool and like shit like that in the 90s.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. So it's just all around you. And you said you get into your first band when you're like 10?
Probably, yeah, fifth grade. We were playing in a band called The Skaters, which was SK8TERZ.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Skaters. I don't think we played a show. Like, I would play with the same few people over the years, but I don't think we played a single show until like 10th grade or something. We played some backyard, or maybe 9th grade. And then I moved shortly after that.
Okay. So you had a group of friends you were playing with like through like your like middle school year, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it's just garage.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. What was the first show you went to?
See, that whole timeline is so jumbled to me. But the first, like, we went and saw Hatebreed at some like radio fest one time, but I don't know what year that was. And then I went and saw like Pantera and Morbid Angel at one point, but okay. I think that was like 99 or 2000. It was definitely one of those. It was like a concert for sure. And we went to this venue, the Webster Theater, a lot, which was a bigger place in Connecticut that had like Black Label Society and shit like that. Rarely hardcore shows. We did later. Twitching Tongues actually played there years later.
Was that where? What show did y'all play there?
We played. We played there a few times, or at least two times. I think Code Orange, Twitching Tongues was what was there.
Okay.
And it was a fucking, basically a brawl the whole time we played. It was so sick.
There you go, dude. Love that. I mean, it's always interesting when you like visit something as a child or as like a young person, and then like years later have some kind of like full circle moment.
It's honestly the sickest thing.
Yo, it is. Yeah, for sure. I like a couple spots like that for me where I was like, I've like kind of like stopped myself and been like, oh damn, like
I'm here.
If I told my young self I would be doing this, they'd be like, what? Like,
yeah. Yeah, when I was a kid, I had aspirations of doing merch. Where it was like, man, I wish we had merch. And now I'm like, I hope I never do merch again.
I mean, God's Hate moves a lot of merch.
Yeah. Lately.
Yeah. Made these friends, was it just through like your brother, or was it just like you met these people at school?
So these people were, yeah, they were just classmates, same grade. And one of them was my friend Anthony, who we knew each other since like first grade, and he picked up guitar. He's actually like an insane guitar player, but we kind of like diverged in styles a little bit over the years. He loves like, prog stuff like Between the Buried and Me and shit like that.
Sure.
But he appreciates all the like, he likes Death Threat and Hatebreed and shit too. Okay. He actually lives in Philly now, but he lived in Connecticut for years after I left.
I see. Was he like playing like for anybody after you left or?
Yeah, he had like a death metal band he did with a bunch of like local dudes called Face Hole. it was real like green paint your guitar gurgly death metal shit.
Gotcha. But
he's still ripped. He riffs at piano too.
Oh, yeah,
all around good musician. Never really ended up in the right band.
So, you know, like throughout like this time period, you're going up good shows, it sounds like, with your friends, like playing, you know, just garage style. You said you played your first show in like 9th or 10th grade?
Yeah, in like some kid's backyard.
Okay. Was it just y'all?
There was like the local pop punk band played the show too, I think.
I see.
Yeah, it was just like whatever bands existed in our high school played the show.
I know the exact type of show from like that exact type of time period and one's life. How long did y'all stay like a band through high? Well, I guess you moved soon after this.
In the middle of 10th grade, I moved.
Okay. So you move in the middle of 10th grade. You go from Connecticut to,
Straight to Van Nuys.
I didn't know if there was a carryover like place in California or not.
No, we did live in a few different places in Van Nuys, but we didn't really leave the valley.
Your dad wasn't working working for ESPN or?
So when he worked at ESPN, it was like a travel job. He was going and doing like NASCAR and shit like that. And then, he eventually went freelance and did like the Olympics and shit like that. And then he got a job. He was traveling for years. That's what like ruined their marriage and shit like that. He'd be gone for months at a time.
Yeah.
And, he got a job offer that wasn't necessary for him to travel in California. So my mom was really into that idea. She had a partner at the time who like, she was like, hey, I'm going to do this. And he wasn't interested in moving. And she's like, well, I have to go. Hmm. So they actually tried to make it work for 6 months, which was super weird because they hadn't been together in like 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That long. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like super awkward for a little bit. Yeah. And then we settled into beautiful San Fernando Valley.
Was that like jarring for you, or did you like take to that move?
Yeah. I mean, Connecticut is, especially West Hartford is like kind of the caricature of what people think Connecticut is. Like everyone's fucking like white and rich and shit.
Yeah.
And it was, definitely a culture shock to move to California, but in a good way, it was like, you know, you see that this is what the country is supposed to be like, you know, a diverse mishmash of people. And it doesn't really feel like it where I grew up, and here it is for sure. And it's nice.
I mean, like, you know, like add a, like, when you're in, you're around people of like different walks of life, perspectives or whatever, it just, it enriches your own personal perspective because you're not just getting one type of, you know, one type of thing.
Yeah, you don't you live in a fucking vacuum when you're kind of surrounded by the same thing.
Yeah, like it's like, I don't know, like here, chamber. You know, if you go 20 minutes outside of the city, it's just like, it's like country. So it's just, and it's just all white people. And they, yeah. You know, have like their views and concepts and ideas, you know, out there. And I think a lot of it, like you know, a lot of let's say short-sighted views that exist out there are
for because sure.
People don't interact with different walks of life, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it is a culture, but it's one culture. Mm-hmm. Whereas yeah. Here, I can basically see them all in one spot.
So you get there and are you immediately like, I got to keep playing. I got to find people to play with, what was that part of the journey? Like
that, it was definitely super weird. When we got here, the high school system was super weird and it has like two summers. So when we got here in January, I was off until March, which when you're 16, that feels like a year.
Dog. Yeah.
So I basically just wrote songs alone and I looked on the internet to find people to play in bands with and found a couple of people within like 6 months. Within 6 months of living here, I had a band, and then within like maybe 8 months, we played shows.
Where were you looking? Like, where were you like searching for these people?
There was a website here called CaliHardcore.com that just had a listing of shows and it had like ads, like looking to be in a band shit. Okay. And so, then there's like Lamgo and shit like that. People would talk on there and Bridge Nine Board at some point. And all these things kind of just led me to where to go. And I ended up playing in a few bands, and then Colin eventually got into it and kind of joined the band that was already going, which was, he probably talked about Fight Everyone, which was our first band that actually did stuff.
That wasn't the first band that you joined. That wasn't the first band you made when you were in, when you moved there, though, is it?
No. So we had a band before that called, or I had a band before that called One Round Left, which was like a, okay. We had weird Slayer parts and, but also sounded like Internal Affairs. It was like I was getting into the LA kind of styles, but I also had my weird East Coast style where I wanted everything to be heavy, but I also was really into this like kind of punky shithead vibe that LA has, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like a really awkward combo of those things. And we covered Firestorm at a show. Okay. And this dude was like, dude, I heard the end. Play it again. So we played it again. And after the show, it was this dude, Mikey, who I ended up starting Fight Everyone with.
Okay.
And that was kind of how that happened. I also played in a death metal band called Crematorium. I did a lot of touring with that band, actually, like from, I think, 2005 to 2009.
Were you still in, like, were you still in high school at that point, or were you out?
The first tour I did was spring break of my senior year. We did a 2-week tour with Deicide.
Oh, whoa, dude.
Yeah.
Well, how did this, I had never heard of this band. How did this come about?
It was just from me going to shows, and I think the singer still books shows in LA of that band Crematorium. He books like a lot of the death metal shows, and at the time he booked a lot of the hardcore shows.
Interesting.
And he saw One Round Left play, and we had blast beats in a spot, and he asked if I would fill in for Crematorium, and it ended up being me joining the band. Crematorium also had this weird thing where they toured with hardcore bands sometimes. Like there was a Crematorium Donnybrook Hoods tour at one point.
Oh, wow.
before I was in the band. And and I just ended up joining the band. We never recorded anything with me in the band, but because I joined right when their album came out. Mm. But the kid who played on it, I guess, couldn't actually play the songs live. Oh. Yeah, it was a weird situation.
Can you like find that? Can you find Crematorium online?
Yeah, they were on Prosthetic Records. There's two albums out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Damn. All right, I'm going to look that up, because like I had no idea about that one in your discography.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And because I didn't play on the albums, it's like not really connected to me.
Okay.
But I did do 4 years of touring in a band, and it was kind of like almost a lesson of like what not to do on tours. Like, tow a trailer and a V6, like your fucking shit's gonna break down. And like, you know, maybe don't go on a package tour with five bands that nobody gives a fuck about, because you're gonna be playing 500 cap rooms with 15 people in it.
Good lord, man.
Fucking brutal.
Well, I mean, I guess better to learn then than later. You know?
Yeah, and it wasn't like on me at the time, so it was just kind of like, I'm just playing drums in this and going with the flow. Okay. And then when I took that to my bands, it was like, okay, we're absolutely not going to do this. We're going to do two bands, and we're going to make sure we tour with somebody else that maybe people give a shit about.
Sure. And you know, it's just so interesting to me that you go from kind of doing like, you know, you do like One Round Left, and Fight Everyone starts, you know, like around this time period. And like, this just, it just seems like a, like had Fight Everyone like hit the road at all yet?
We didn't play out a lot, but every show we played was kind of crazy.
Okay.
I think because it was like it was the MySpace era. Mm. I think the farthest we played in the Bay a good bit. And then we played as far as Vegas, I think.
Okay.
Maybe Arizona at some point. But we didn't do a ton, but the reach was kind of there because of the internet.
Yeah, the dawn of kind of like, being able to have like tentacles out there like that with like social media and everything.
Yeah, without doing real touring.
You know, you brought something up earlier about One Round Left, where you were like, okay, I'm getting into sort of like the LA vibe sonically, but also trying to bring in sort of like the heavier aspects of like the East, so like the Northeast.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about how part of Hartford is like Albany, and how you would lean towards, you know, Troy core stuff. When did that hit your radar, and like how did you get into like bands of that ilk?
It was definitely later. I would say I think I heard Stigmata maybe 2007 or something.
Okay, so kind of after this time period.
Yeah, it was way after we lived here, but it resonated with me, and it just kind of like, and we had, I think we went and played Albany not that long after that, and we had, you know, just when Colin and I get into something, we kind of go all the way in and like research it and shit. So we got down to the nitty gritty, and it was like, oh, there's this venue here, they played this venue here, shit like that. And like, we ended up playing Bogies at some point after that, and that was like exciting to us, where everybody there is kind of like, get us the fuck out of here. But I guess it was like before Ruckus that we got into Stigmata.
Okay. Was it like just Stigmata, or were you like also
Stigmata was the gateway, and then we got it, like I said, we kind of deep dive, and we got into literally everything we could, down to like Cutthroat, Execution Style, Dead and Dying, and yep. Dying Breed. Well, Dead and Dying was later.
Yeah, I don't know Cutthroat or Execution Style. I do know Dead and Dying, and I know Dying Breed.
Yeah.
Was it like Cutthroat and Execution Style, like similar people, or is
Cutthroat
just...
was just another Albany band, and then Execution Style was like the guitar player of Dying Breed's brother's band.
Okay.
There's Section 8, which is like the,
oh yeah, I know that one.
The kind of Troy Core Life of Agony.
Yep.
Politics of Contraband, which is another, that's the same dude from Dying Breed's other band. I think his brother is also in, or was also in that band. Withstand, which is like kind of proto, or like they heard, it's, I almost say it's the Troy Core Bane, but they don't really sound like Bane. They just kind of sound like very 90s in a super accessible way, but then they still have the straight igno Troy Core parts.
Yeah. Where were you finding like all this like information? Where were you doing y'all's research?
I mean, the internet is a vast hole of information.
Yeah. It is. It is.
And then, you know, meeting people, like eventually meeting like Bruce LePage and talking to him about stuff. He showed me a couple things. Honestly, Scott Vogel is also a gateway into those things. Like,
sure.
You know, he'll be like, yo, what do you know about this? and then you find out about it.
And then he tells you. I don't know. I've had similar conversations with him for sure.
Yeah.
So, but it's just, okay, so that was interesting because I feel like, you know, and we'll get to it a little bit later, but I remember, like, you know, the first time I encountered y'all and like y'all's music, y'all were putting on for like Troycore stuff pretty hard. And I was like, well, I know Stigmata, but I was like, what's
there's more.
Yeah. I was like, what do you like, what's Troycore, you know?
Yeah.
And then like, it was like, you know, because of y'all, I was like, all right, well, let me try to find some of these other bands. And, you know, and that, yeah, that's like how it came across, like Dying Breed and Section 8 and like Dead and Dying and stuff.
Yeah.
But I felt like a lot of it was like, you know, like fairly mysterious. There, I feel like, you know, like there wasn't like as much, like, I feel like I like you just listed a bunch of bands. I'm like, I've never even heard of those. It's surprising to me because I'm like, oh, I wonder where these things were like chronicled.
Yeah, I think there was one big era and there was a kind of explosion where, and like everybody in the area started bands.
Yeah.
And like they would go up to Montreal and play all the time and kind of sure. play in that general zone. And it kind of seemed like they all really liked Pantera. That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
And I love Pantera. So it just kind of resonated with me.
As do I. I never really thought about like the Pantera reference with some of that stuff, but I'm gonna go back and like listen to like, you know, like the top ones of those with that lens.
Just yeah, like the scoop, pick that up. Super scoop guitars and like the clicky kick and shit like that.
Yep. Oh yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was always just super curious about y'all's affinity for that. So I had to, while it was in my mind, it was like I wanted to, you know, kind of go off on that tangent. But yeah. So you get in, you know, you're getting into that stuff. So you're in school, but like you go on like, you know, these crematorium tours kind of towards the end of like high school. Is mm-hmm. is all in your head? Are you like, I'm just trying to play music, or was there some other kind of you know, plan, or was it just this?
I was in school a little bit. I think I did 2 years of college, and then I did get an audio job offer. It's called an A2 position, which is like a television audio job. Mm-hmm. And I passed on the job to go on a crematorium tour. And then when I was home, before I recorded bands, I was definitely doing like various audio things for different companies, because my dad was freelance. So he would just kind of get my foot in the door with places.
Oh, okay, I see. All
right. But playing music was definitely always the goal, and it was like, oh, well, when I'm home, I'll do what I got to do.
Sure, sure. So, you like, what does Ruckus start during crematorium, or is it after?
I was definitely I was in crematorium basically up until I joined Nails.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, we actually, there's no like official stopping point, but it just kind of fizzled out and we stopped playing. And then I think there were some personal problems with band members. Not like between each other, but like individually, one of the guitar players wasn't able to play guitar anymore because of carpal tunnel or something.
Oh, sure.
And then singer fell on some hard times and just kind of fizzled out. But Ruckus actually shared at one point a practice space with crematorium.
Gotcha. And was Ruckus, was that like your brainchild, like you and your brother, or was it you?
It was me and him. Yeah.
Okay.
And then this dude Jacob, who was the singer, it was basically the three of us. I met Jacob because he sang in a band called Hammer Fist that played with Fight Everyone a couple times. Mm-hmm. And thought his voice was sick, which I still think his voice is sick. And we just kind of went for it, just because I think, you know, Fight Everyone was always kind of goofy.
Yeah.
and it was goofy, but the shows were sick, and we kind of just wanted to do something that was a little more serious.
I see. Okay. I was going to ask, like, what the I was like, what was like kind of like the intention when y'all put that together? But it's basically doing something heavy, like similar to what you were doing before, but just more self-serious, I suppose.
Yeah, not a self-aware gag. Gotcha. It's like everyone wearing camo and shit like that.
Yeah. So, you know, when that starts, is it received the same way Fight Everyone was received, or was it, you know, kind of like slow? What was kind of the experience when that happened?
It was definitely lukewarm, because there was no like wow factor. It was just like, we just want to write good songs and play shows, and didn't really know how to do anything with that. So we would just play all the shows we could. We did a couple weekends here and there, but it never really caught on. And then we did the Toasting Tongues demo, which caught on kind of immediately. So it kind of became this trade where we slowly stopped doing Ruckus and started taking Toasting Tongues more seriously.
I see. And that that demo is 2009?
We wrote it in 2009. I think it came out in 2010.
Actually, okay, that makes sense. Because I remember when it was first shown to me, and yeah, I think that would have been 2010 or maybe even 11. But
we did the 7-inch shortly after the demo.
Okay, you know, so you make this band, and something that, you know, was interesting to me is nothing sounded like that at the time. And you said people took to it like immediately, which is cool, but like in retrospect, it's like surprising to me, because it's like I remember hearing it and I was like, I think this is cool, but it didn't sound like what like is like super popular right now by any means.
Right. I think that's what it was. It was kind of right time or right thing at the right time, and because it was different, it turned heads.
Yeah. Because people weren't referencing like Only Living Witness or like Life of Agony, you know, like y'all, like in the way that y'all were, you know?
not an entire band, but maybe like in a part here
like
or there.
Part, yeah, sure, but not like, you know, not the whole thing. Where did y'all get kind of like the idea to do a band of like that vein?
I don't remember what it was. I think we were writing a Ruckus song. And we did, we were like, all right, let's maybe try some clean vocals here or something like that. And then there was just something said where it was like, next time we do a new band, we should do one that's all clean vocals. And gotcha. Like maybe just us, so that we can, you know, doesn't matter who's in the band, we can always do the band.
Pretty much. I see. Okay. Which, so it was like immediately like, you know, we can have a revolving door. It's like, you know, we don't have to manage a bunch of different people. It's going to be our thing.
Yeah, it'll be our thing. And there's you know, no one else who can kind of fuck it up. Not that, like, we didn't have a problem with Ruckus or anything, but it was just always like, you know, three schedules is harder than two.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, like, our, you know, the demo comes out. And you said the 7-inch comes out shortly after. So it comes out and I, you, like you said, people took to it pretty quickly. What was kind of like, did somebody reach out to you about doing the 7-inch or were you already shopping it around?
So we had started recording an LP immediately.
Oh, wow.
Just because it was like, well, you know, the demo did well. We're just going to keep writing. Two of the songs that are on the LP, there were like demo versions that didn't make it on the demo. So we kind of just refined those songs.
I see.
So we just kept recording. So some of the music for the LP was recorded, I want to say even late 2010, if not beginning of 2011.
Okay.
Something like that. And I think, so Colin went on tour playing drums for Alpha and Omega, and I think played a song for Trapped Under Ice or something. Mm-hmm. And this kid, Nick Heitman, I'm sure you know Nick Heitman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Nick Heitman for sure.
He heard it and he was like, yo, I'll put this out. And then we just like kind of took a couple songs from the LP and put it on a 7-inch.
That was Photo Booth Records?
Photo Booth, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Wow. All right. Bringing me back. All right.
And so we were just kind of like, well, we'll just kind of make it a teaser for the LP. And then we did a CD in Europe of the 7-inch songs and the demo together.
When, and like, so that just came out in Europe, but y'all hadn't like been there yet or anything, yeah?
We didn't go there yet, but then we had a tour there shortly after. We did like a Ruckus Twitching Tongues short tour.
What year was that in?
I want to say it was 2011.
Oh, okay. So this is all happening pretty quickly.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we started going for it just because it was like, oh, this is going to do something. Well, let's go. Like within, I think the 7-inch came out and we immediately did a full US with like Minus, Expire, Soul Search, I think.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that happening. Okay. All right. So, damn, I remember that tour happening. I did not realize that it was all this was happening like so like quickly, though.
Yeah, but when you're younger, a year is forever. Like now a year goes by in a fucking flash of an eye. It's so fucking fast. It's insane.
Oh, dude, like especially the past couple years, just without like, how things being, I'm like, oh, wow. Like stuff that occurred in like 2019, I was like, oh, man, that's like almost 3 years ago now, but it feels
I mean, obviously these 2 years are different, but even before that time felt like it was going fast. Sure. But when you're older, you start planning things that are 9 months out, which is
definitely
that's nuts. When you're a kid and you're planning something 9 months out, it's a fucking it's 10 years away.
Yeah. So you know, like you said, you know, people are feeling it. Like you're getting a lot of music out there and everything. Like I imagine somewhere in there you're kind of like thinking like, nah, like let's maybe put Ruckus on the back burner.
Yeah, there was definitely a talk about it. And I started doing nails, which actually also started doing stuff. So yeah, I think we just kind of flip-flopped it. We didn't end Ruckus. Really, it just kind of that also kind of fizzled out. But we did an LP, and it was also just kind of received okay. So we were just like, well, we'll play a couple shows, and then we'll focus on this.
You know, you talk about joining Nails. How did like what year did that occur, and how did that come about?
It was so Todd and I talked a bunch in like 2009. I just kind of punished him on the internet when I was a kid, and like he was pretty like open about stuff. He would just send me shit. Like he just sent me the Betrayed record like 6 months before it came out or something.
Cool.
Yeah, like he was just a cool dude that wanted to talk to people,
right?
And we just kind of kept in touch, and we initially talked about starting a band, and then he ended up doing it with that dude Tom Hogan initially, mm-hmm. Who played drums on the White record.
Okay.
And later just asked if I would help out, and then it kind of turned into me joining. It was kind of a slow process that was mostly on me, just because I was like, well, I do this band that I kind of want to focus on, which was actually Ruckus at the time. And so I was reluctant, but eventually it was like, oh, this is going to be something.
Yeah. Cause I mean like what I remember probably after this time period, but like, I remember like, I don't know, like, you know, you would go to certain places on the internet and you would like see things related to hardcore and you expected to see those things. But I remember one day I was like reading like a Complex article about people around the office or something, and like talking about what they were wearing, and some guy had like a Nails long sleeve on there, and I was like, this is a cross section I would have never like imagined, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that band in particular gets to a point where it's like a lot of people, I'm not gonna say people that don't even like know what hardcore is, but like, you know, like people that are like really like not in touch with it at all became like big Nails fans.
Yeah, it became a metal band.
Yeah. How did that occur with that particular band? Was that like kind of like, I could see it kind of going two ways, and you can let me know. Maybe I'm wrong about both. One is intentionally being like, all right, let's pump this to like a different unit of people than we're used to playing to. Or was it the kind of thing where it was like, we're just going to play what we want to play, and whoever fucks with it, cool.
I think it started like that, where it was just like, before, I think there were maybe 12 or 13 shows before I joined, and they would just kind of play whatever. They played like a local death metal fest, they played hardcore shows, they played punk shows in Santa Barbara. And then when we started, I think it was, we just turned it into writing a record, and then we wrote the record. It was really cool. We did as much as we could with it within hardcore. Like, we just went on tour with just by ourselves, no crazy goals, and it just kind of happened. And then after, I think it like peaked in hardcore, so it kind of overflowed into metal territory a little bit, and then those people started getting like trickling over. And by the time we did the second LP, it was like half and half. Like, it was half metal people and half hardcore kids at the shows.
What was the first LP that you were on?
Unsilent Death.
Okay. Okay, because I do just think, I remember like doing a show for y'all, and I remember I co-promoted it with just like a metal guy. Like, so I remember, I definitely like distinctly remember like that time period. But you're doing that, like how active are y'all being while you're also doing Twitching Tongues? Like, I imagine this is kind of like a lot to manage.
So it was initially we were gonna go hard. Like, we were on a 30-day tour when we had a talk about it. Like, let's fucking go. And then we had like some crazy metal tour lined up that we were going to do. And then, Todd found out he was having a child. So we were like, all right, well, you know, at first it was like, there goes that. And then it was like, you know what? We can do this. Like, we can just do what we can do. And I think that doing what we can do worked in our favor, where it was just like everybody, people were kind of clamoring for it so that we would go play a show. It felt special.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I viewed it. I was like, oh, if you get the chance to see them, you have to go, because it's not like an all the time thing.
Right. And I think, yeah, I think that really helped. And then we did that for probably 4 years or something, and we eventually got a second guitar player. We did the second record, and we still kind of did that, but then we started adding like tours here and there when we could. And by the time we did the last record, it was like planning, full planning mode. But also I would work almost everything around Nails' schedule.
Oh, really? Okay, so that was kind of taking first chair?
A little bit. Like, you know, there was a little bit of both of them working around, but it was kind of, it was mostly, I would work around Nail stuff just because Nail stuff was more rare.
Right.
I think there was only one time where Twitching Tongues had to play without me, and it was like, it wasn't until 2017 or something like that.
Okay, so much deeper into it. So, you know, while that's going on with Nails, you have like a project that is a band that's doing like, you know, like very, very well, and it's working itself into being like a commodity that's like sought after because of the nature of the setup. What was occurring for you kind of like on the other end of your, you know, other end of your table with like Twitching Tongues kind of in like, I guess we were kind of last thing we were talking about was like 2011, kind of what was going on in like when's the first LP come out there?
It ended up coming out kind of late in like 2012 after we finished it. I want to say like summer 2011, and we handed it in, and we had a tour booked for November and shit. And we were just like, and then they told us it would come out April 2012. And there's a little bit of unrealistic expectations from us. Like, oh, we need it now, you know, but that's just not how that works.
Yeah.
So we like leaked the record.
Oh, okay. Yep. Colin told me.
Yeah, we just put it out in the world. Everybody heard it, and then tour ended up being sick. But we literally like did a record release tour 6 months before the album came out.
This is Sleep Therapy, yes?
Yeah.
And who did that record?
Ice Cream Records, and the vinyl was done by Dirty Mick Records.
How did, like, what was the link up with these? How did you guys get in contact with this label?
Busky, actually. He introduced me to the dude Lawrence, who did Ice Cream.
Okay.
And we actually just got the rights back to that, because I think Ice Cream was just like, yeah, you guys can have this back. And so we're going to do some shit with that soon.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
But yeah, it was, he just kind of intro'd us. He really liked the record, and it was a pretty easy process. It was definitely a learning experience, just cause it was like I would say it was a not great record deal, like with a contract and shit. Mm. And so it kind of made me a little smarter about those things later.
Sure.
But that's just how those things go. Like, I even had somebody look over it that says, yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard, but I think when you're a small band, the standard is not good. If that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I see what you're, I mean, I see what you're getting at. And I mean, I guess it's the kind of thing where it's like, you, as many projects and bands as you've done, I at least like you, it's like, seems like you learn like a lot of like the harder lessons early on, as opposed to like rising to a certain point, kind of experiencing that in like the middle of a band's career, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it like putting like a huge sour taste in your mouth, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Cause that definitely does happen. But so, you know, that comes, so when that does come out later in you know, you said summer of 2012.
It came out, yeah, it ended up coming out, I think, April 2012, and okay, then...
so it did come out in April, all right.
Around then, we just, we had already been writing a ton more, and I think we had the Preacher Man 7-inch on deck and ready to come out, and I think it came out October 2012.
Okay, so like, same year.
So we popped out the LP finally, and then we were like, you know what, we're already in the next zone. Here's this, and then we played This Is Hardcore, and we played Preacher Man for the first time at that show.
Okay, and that is where, like, you know, I had known about Charles Demo, and I had known about like Insane and Humane. I don't know why, like, at the time, like, maybe because of the release, like, at what you're talking about, how, like, Sleep Therapy, like, missed my radar that year.
Yeah. But
then the Preacher Man 7-inch didn't. Like, I knew about, because, like, I remember that coming out and it being, like, a big deal.
I think because of the weird leak thing that we did, it, like, made people skip the record itself. It was like, oh, these songs are cool. And it was still like, none of the songs that came out were bigger than Insane and Humane, which was on the record.
I see. Okay.
So like that kind of already, like, people talked about Insane and Inhumane as a record for years after, where, yeah, it was like, that was really just the teaser to the LP.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that probably explains it. So Preacher Man comes out. It was Preacher Man. How many songs was it? It was three.
We did three songs. It was two songs and a Candlemass cover.
Hell yeah! What Candlemass song did y'all do again? I'm trying to remember.
We did At the Gallows End.
Oh, beautiful song.
Yeah,
beautiful song. So you know, that comes out, and yeah, I mean, like, Preacher Man was like hit, like almost like radio hit style. Is what I remember. You know, I remember like people like attaching to like that like really quickly. That is where I start noticing like people kind of like jumping on the Twitching Tongues train.
Yeah, it was almost like a reboot, kind of like, mm-hmm, the demo and the first 7-inch were this one era, and then a lot of people decided they didn't like it when the LP came out, the first one.
Okay.
Like, it kind of shifted a little bit.
Okay.
And then Preacher Man came out, and it shifted again.
Gotcha.
And then we did, so yeah, then that was the first thing we did with Close Casket.
And how had y'all kind of made that connection?
Justin was just into it. I think we became friends because of Creatures. Creatures did a 7-inch on Close Casket super early on, and we just kind of talked, and then he started doing our merch and stuff, and then it was like, hey, when we had the 7-inch with a Preacher Man 7-inch ready, I was like, hey, I kind of want to jump off of this other thing that we have, and we want to put it out with you. And he was into it, and we've done like fucking 10 records since then.
Yeah, but I'm about to say, it's like the union between Justin and you and your brother and everything is you know, definitely a unit that I like attribute with one another. Are you recording at all during this time period?
Yeah, I think like we went on tour with Soul Search and Minus because I recorded Soul Search and Minus.
Okay.
And there's definitely a ton of records around then. I think I did a bunch of early Rotting Out stuff that never came out, and then we did Street Prowl. I think that was 2011, and then 2012. I think I did a bunch of World of Pain and Zabalba stuff. Hasta La Muerte, I think, was 2012.
How had you gotten into recording? When had you started doing that, and you know, how did you kind of become like the go-to guy?
How I became, I don't know. It's kind of weird how I think I had just tracked a couple bands' demos because other bands heard our pre-production demos. It was weird. I remember it a bunch of different ways. Like I definitely started doing it early, like when I was probably 16. Just to like track my own stuff, but I didn't have a recording that I trusted myself with until like 2010 or something like that. I think I did the World of Pain demo in 2009. That was the first time I let somebody pay me to record something that actually came out and did something.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that demo, like those three songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a hard ass song on that one. I remember somebody showed that to me like on a port somewhere here, and I was like, God damn. I had no idea you recorded that. Look at that.
I did, yeah. I did all of their stuff actually, except for they did one record right before they broke up. They did that somewhere else.
Okay.
And then Zabalba, I think, came to me because of World of Pain.
Mm, okay.
And then things just kind of spiral from there. I just got lucky and recorded a couple bands that actually did stuff, and then other bands started coming over here.
Yeah, I'm about to say, it's like some of these records you mentioned, it's like, oh, those records did really well. Like Hasta La Muerte did very well. Street Prowl did very well, you know.
It was lucky right time, right place.
Just lightning striking. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, between doing Nails and Twitching Tongues during this time period, like, are you just coming back home in between tours of them and just like, you know, like hitting the studio hard, you know, kind of how's the balance going right then?
It was definitely as much as I could. Definitely a lot of touring just because I was going between the two bands, and then what definitely kept me afloat was having recordings to do at home, but that was pretty much it. Yeah.
You know, so it's, I mean, it sounds like a good schedule to have. You're playing in two bands at the time people are very into. And then when you come home, you're still doing band shit, but you know, making money, you know, like doing it. Yeah. And everything. You know, so with, I guess it's tough because you're in, it's almost like tough to kind of like zero in like on this time period in your life, because you're in two bands that are like very popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's making my brain go in circles thinking about it right now.
I'm trying to like ask questions about like thinking about each project during the time period. I'm like, damn, I was like, but both these are kind of going gangbusters, so it's like sort of like hard. So I guess Preacher Man 7-inch comes out.
Mm-hmm.
When does In Love There Is No Law come out?
That was, I believe, summer of the next year, 2013.
Okay, so there's some time elapsed in between.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time on the album. Again, we did the same thing where we include the two songs from the 7-inch on the album.
Okay.
And then In Love There's No Law, we did a music video, and we were going for it. And I think the only, and then people heard World War V, and that was the next thing.
Ah, yes. You know, so I do remember like the singles, so to speak, you know, like coming out around this, because I remember like hearing World War V, me and like, first off, I was like, oh, I know the reference here, being a big, you know, carnivore fan. I was like, fuck yes.
fan fiction.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the thing is that like, I talked about this with your brother. It was so interesting watching y'all. Y'all were doing this tastemaker thing, like unintentionally, I suspect, of,
you know. I don't think anyone can plan that.
Yeah, it's like you brought, like, you know, I knew what Candlemass was because I grew up listening to it, but none of my hardcore friends, you know, knew what Candlemass was when I was growing up. And then like y'all come out and like it's like, you know, covering them, bringing that to like the attention of the hardcore community. You know, like I knew people, I liked, you know, Typo and like Carnivore and stuff, but like not a lot of my friends did. Twitching comes along, and it's like y'all bringing that into, you know, people's influence and in view, and the Troy stuff. And that was something that I admittedly didn't know as much about, but because of y'all got, you know, into. It was just so interesting. It's like so much stuff that you and your brother and your bands are doing were bringing these outside influences, even though Troy core stuff wouldn't necessarily be outside, but you're bringing it into like the canon, you know, in a way.
Sure.
And I thought that was just from like a like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like an anthropology or sociology standpoint, I was like, oh, this is so interesting to see, you know, people like gravitating towards this stuff that like, you know, a couple years ago, like they probably would have no interest in, because they wouldn't have a band like Twitching Tongues to like filter that sound to them, you know, through. You know, so that's so kind of like, what's this? You're spending a lot of time working on the record. Are you doing like nail stuff at the beginning of that year too, or are you just kind of focusing on recording?
Yeah, there was definitely a bunch of nail stuff. We were writing, I think we were, I don't remember when A Band All Life came out in comparison to And Love There's No Law.
Okay.
But I think it was within 6 months or something. It might have been before. Fuck. I don't know. Maybe it was 2014. I remember Saba joining and playing This Is Hardcore. That was his first show.
Okay. I think I was there for that one.
Yeah, it was sick. And it felt like a new era for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember when that was. But yeah, both bands were writing. It's kind of weird. Like, my brain goes in modes. And like, in Nails mode, I'm not thinking about anything else. And then in Twitching Tongues mode, I'm not thinking about anything else. And, you know, that goes for stuff I'm doing now, too. Where it's like, I have to, like, literally switch over.
Yeah. Like reconfigure yourself for, you know, like, whatever the specific project is.
Yeah.
Or are you playing anything else at the time, or is it just those two bands?
Disgrace was doing stuff.
Okay, yeah. When did Disgrace start, and kind of, you know, what was sort of the intention and idea around that?
It was basically at the end of Creature's life. The drummer, Mike, who also played in Twitching Tongues, and Kyle, who later played in Twitching Tongues, just wanted to do some kind of, you know, new techie shit. And they asked if I would sing for it. And it took a while, just because the songs are so insane. There's like so much that happens.
There's a lot. Those are busy like, songs for sure.
Yeah. And I think it was, I think we had a demo that we were going to put out in like 2011, maybe. And then we ended up holding off on it and just turning it into, we added one more song and we did a way better recording. And then put out that first 12-inch in 2012.
Yeah, I do remember y'all going straight to 12-inch on that one.
Yeah, well, and so it was all because I shot like a shot in the dark to Dan Seagrave, who did the artwork. I was like, hey, you don't, like, we're not a big band or anything. This is going to essentially be a demo. Will you do the cover? And he was like, yeah.
Yeah, with like the skulls on it and everything?
Yeah, and so we were like, fuck, like, we have 10 minutes of music. But this cover's so sick, we can't put it on a 7-inch. So we just did a 12 inch. Just because the cover is so sick.
Dude, that's awesome. Okay, that makes sense.
And the label was down. He was like, fuck yeah.
Who put that one out?
Close Casket.
Okay, I thought they did. I just didn't know if it was like a weird side entity or something. Okay, so you do that. I mean, how often does Disgrace play in this time period?
A lot less than any of the other bands, but yeah. I think that was mainly just because Switching Tongues and Nails were touring.
Right.
And then we would do like weekends here and there. I don't think we did a tour until we didn't do a real tour until we did the LP, which was like 2014, I think that came out.
Okay.
Maybe even 15. No, 14.
So, see, like now we're getting into the time period with you where it's like stuff's coming out almost like every week, I feel like.
Yeah, I definitely had like at least two records a year for 4 years or something like that.
Yeah, and which is Lord, man. Like, but yeah,
it's crazy.
And like, not to mention all the stuff you're recording for other people. You know, so I guess In Love There Is No Law comes out, you said later 2013, yeah?
Yeah.
I feel like this is like a very extreme energetic time period in Twitching Tongues' existence.
Yeah, like, that was definitely the peak.
What was talk to me. What was that experience in like for you? I almost feel like with how much stuff that you're doing, it's just kind of like thinking about the future. Like not even like it's like, all right, we got to think about the next thing, you know, like we got to keep pushing because you're just so busy, you know, like I feel like that's the only way to were you kind of like aware of like how big stuff was getting, or was it just kind of like eyes forward?
A little bit. Yeah. Like right when we did In Love There's No Law, we were like planning as much touring as we could. Mm-hmm. We went to Europe like 3 times. We did the fake live record after that, just to do something ridiculous, and then we already started looking at like big labels just to do the next step, just because that's what we felt like we needed to do.
Right.
And yeah, and then The Love Isn't a Law, we would get checked a little bit where like we sometimes it felt like it was getting crazy, and then we would have like a normal show, and then we're like, okay, all right, chill out. Like, it's not the most insane shit. Like, it comes in waves where you have like a moment, and then it chills for a bit,
okay,
and then you have a moment somewhere else, and then it chills for a bit. Mm. And those sometimes we would get ahead of ourselves. I think.
I see.
And I think. We've started to feel normal, or you know what? We stayed ahead of ourselves pretty much, and Disharmony came out, and that was the like roadblock.
Well, that comes out in what, 15 or 14?
15.
Okay, so there's it's like a little over a year had elapsed.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll stay in the pocket just to keep it, you know, like chronological. Nails had come out with
Abandon All Life.
Abandon All Life. Yes. Yeah. So I was trying to remember I was getting the last one confused. Mm-hmm. So that came out what, also 13, or
I think it was 13. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it one took a while because Unsigned Death came out in 2010.
That's right.
So we actually had like a session that didn't make, like that was supposed to be for the album that didn't make it. And then we went back and kind of started over.
Was Nails, like you talk about the kind of like the Twitching Tongues thing where it's like the, like, hey, sometimes it'd be crazy. And then other times it'd just be like, okay, we're, you know, like you get grounded and be like, okay, it's a normal show, you know, whatever. Was Nails like that? Or was it always kind of like, because of the lack of ability to see Nails, but was it always kind of like a high energy type situation?
There was a little bit of Abandon All Life that was like, it wasn't that insane. Like we did like a tour with Ringworm out to This Is Hardcore, and it was like, it was cool, but it wasn't like crazy.
Gotcha.
But then every time we play a fest or like go somewhere else, it was definitely insane. Got Nails, it. Yeah, I guess it was always pretty insane.
The reason I asked that question is because that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
From an observational standpoint, yeah. I was like, oh, it feels like it. You know, it's only the grade is only up. You know, and observationally too, for Twisting Tongues at the time, it felt that way as well. In I get you know like 13, 14, you know whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, you do talk about like you know you guys end up with like the Metal Blade deal, and you end up doing Disharmony. What was kind of you know like you talk? You said yourself like you were kind of like ahead of yourselves in a way. Like kind of what was going on around the writing of that record and the release, and you know kind of how did Metal Blade you know come into the picture?
I think well, so Metal Blade was interested, and we had a manager at the time who really facilitated that, and it was all cool. Like we did like a whole like surreal signing thing where we like went to the King Diamond show and they brought us backstage and we met Andy LaRock and shit like that, and it was like oh, we're doing like weird rock star shit, and it was like cool, this feels good, this feels right. Like, and we talked to a couple other bigger labels that just kind of just felt like they were just throwing numbers at us and it didn't feel like anything, but Metal Blade like wanted to hang out,
sure,
which I learned is definitely their move, I think. But it was definitely cool with them until the album came out. I mean, it was always, they're cool people in general. But the album came out and kind of got, well, first of all, while we were writing it, I think we kind of lost sight of the band a little bit.
Okay.
That like, you know, we have two records out. We kind of have a sound, and we started doing Disharmony and kind of disregarded all the past shit and maybe lost sight of the like general aesthetic of the band and things like that and the sound. I still do love the record, but it's because I was just writing what I wanted to write and not really attributing it to anything that the band had done, so it was kind of a mess in a way. Okay, where it's just, I'm just writing like crazy metal riffs and I'm forgetting that Colin has to fucking sing over them. And so I'm not really leaving room for that. And I don't think it resonated with the people that already liked us because they wanted kind of soft stuff with big mosh parts, and we were just like, it was all heavy except for a couple songs.
Right. No, I mean, I think, you know, first off, you know, you've written a lot of music, and you record a lot of music. You probably know this. Following up a white hot record is always tough.
Yeah.
You know,
it's created pressure for ourselves with the big label and shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I say exactly because like that makes sense, you know? Yeah. And it's always tough to follow up something, you know, like that. And also, you said a little something in there where you're like, you know, you were writing what you wanted to write. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, of course you want to write what you want to write as opposed to like doing it all like fan service style, you know? I guess there is a middle ground.
There probably is. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to find it, because when we did the next record, it was like, well, what I'm going to let Colin kind of take the reins just because I feel like he has a better idea of what it should be. And I think people had already kind of made up their minds about the band by that point. So it was like, all right, well, I'm not even going to check that out.
Was that 2015?
That was 2017.
So it was much later.
Yeah. So yeah, we did tour on Disharmony, and basically the first hit was the band leaving the band.
Oh, that's great.
So we had to, like, we had a music video done. Everybody's, you know, there's a sick photo on the back cover of the band, and then first tour gets booked, and they're like, yeah, we're all out. And you know, they have their reasons, and that's totally fine. They all had forced order and stuff. They had, you know, shit they wanted to do. And you know, Colin and I are admittedly like a little closed off with with other contributing factors musically, you know, with other people.
Sure.
And so, you know, looking back, I think maybe we, that's probably a good part of it. And then we had to kind of scramble to find a lineup, just to do the tour on that album. And so like we start, and then we got a couple really big bad reviews that were like soul crushing.
What, I don't know them, but like what, something like a Kerrang or something, or
there was a full Fantano.
Okay.
Which was like, still, I think it's kind of a fucked up review where he just has his friend on the show to trash the record, like something he doesn't even normally do.
Right.
He just brings another dude to talk shit about the record. And it was just like, come on, man. Like that's
unnecessary.
That's a little distasteful. Yeah. And then there was a Decibel review that was actually, I believe, biased a bit, because there's a person who we have mutual friends with that had stock in shitting on it, kind of, in a way. Okay. So those two things were like, all right, well, these are the two biggest reviews, and they're the two worst reviews.
That's got to be tough, man.
Yeah, it wasn't fun, and you know, we still tried to just fucking go, and we did that tour, and it was still pretty sick, and played some of the biggest places that we could have. And did it with Harm's Way, who we are still like best friends with. I think just because it started like that, and then we ended up just like, we got super discouraged and just kind of stopped, and we canceled a European tour we had and shit like that, and we're just kind of over it.
So, you know, in this time period, like, you know, when was that European tour, like that you canceled?
It was supposed to be summer 2016.
Okay. All right. So you know, like what, you know, like you have, is Nails still like doing as much at this time period? The reason I ask is just like, what is kind of going on away from Twitch and Tones has been such a big thing, I feel like, in like, you know, like the 2010s for you, that's kind of like what's going on away from that for you to focus on at that point?
Well, you know, You Will Never Be One of Us came out, I think, March or April 2016. So we started just going hard on that.
Right.
And that was our biggest record and biggest tours and biggest shows. So it was like
kick-ass record, man.
Oh, thank you. Away from, you know, what felt like kind of a failure with Disharmony, I had the opposite going on as well. So it wasn't like, so while the other thing was soul crushing, I did have something that felt good. Okay. And I think Colin kind of did too, because God's Hate was playing shows around that. Mass Murder came out a few months after Disharmony.
Were you in God's Hate like from the jump? I'm trying to remember.
So, yes and no. No, I'm not on in promo picks, but I played something pretty much almost one out of every four shows I was filling in on some instrument.
I see.
But okay. I was like actively not in the band.
Okay.
And then for this one, it was like, yeah, fuck it, I'm in it.
Okay, so just only the most recent one are you like, I am officially.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think I played on any other records, but I obviously recorded all the other ones.
Sure.
And then this one, I played all the guitars.
Gotcha. All right. Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, You Will Never Be One of Us comes out. I do remember that being big as hell. You know, that was everywhere. You know, people were loving it and everything. So yeah, I mean, conversely, you have a tough time with Disharmony, but you got this other thing, you know, that's being received extremely well. So, you know, I mean, I guess it's like it dilutes the poison a bit.
Yeah.
But you know, so you're doing stuff with that. Are those the only two projects you're doing at that time? I mean, I guess Disgrace is I mean, you only play every so often. So I'm not sure.
Disgrace, yeah, we did stuff for a little bit. I think the last show we played was in 2017 at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So, you know, you put Twitching Tongues away, it seems, for
about a year. And then it was kind of like, cause Colin got pretty defeated and, just, you know, he got a normal job and shit. And we just actively didn't tour. And then, at one point we just decided like, this is a waste. We can do shit. Like, let's bring it back. I think everybody's feeling good now, like 9 months later. And it was like, we got fucking Sean Martin in the band. It's such a waste to have him and not make music with him.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure that had to be like a crazy feeling for you.
Oh, it was fucking incredible. And it was like, yeah, initially it was like, yeah, Sean Martin's playing live. That's fucking sick. And then it became, oh, we're writing music with him now. And it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he contributed some of my favorite things about that last Twitching Tongues record, the opening guitar shit, the acoustic guitar, that's all him, and it's super satisfying to me.
Oh, cool. Hell yeah. Yeah, all right. I didn't know that was like his thing, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's sick. So, you know, again, kind of like another one of those full circle, you know. Like,
oh, big time.
You know, so...
It's the biggest full circle.
You know, so you guys start working on a new record.
Yeah, we got inspired and was just like, you know what, let's just fucking make music. And he got sick of being at home and he realized, oh yeah, working a job sucks. So let's go play music. And then we kind of did it all again. We did like a final, like a Disharmony, or I guess the final tour on that record. We did the Life and Death tour.
Okay.
With No Warning and Terror, I think.
Yes, that sounds accurate.
And then we basically, I think we had the record done before we even did that tour. So we like went back to Metal Blade, said, hey, we're back, we're gonna do a record, and then got it together, recorded it and everything, and then just started going on tour even before that was announced or anything, like just getting back at it.
Were you like, was it like longer tours or just kind of like shorter? Were you like kind of like testing the waters again, or was it?
Yeah, we did a bunch of longer. I think we did like two. We did the Hatebreed tour, and then we did another Hatebreed tour, and then we did the Life and Death tour. We did Persistence tour.
Okay. Europe.
And then, yeah, and then the record came out, and we did a bunch of more fests, and we did the Code Orange tour, and we did Europe with Vane. So we basically just did a whole mess of shit, and it was cool. And then I think we all got burnt out on touring again.
Yeah, you know,
we went pretty hard for like 2 years again.
How, you know, how coming back after kind of like a like going, you were going very hard, and then you weren't going at all, and then coming back kind of going hard again. Like, you know, I'm sure that's number one, jarring, but two, like, what was the, you said it was like, you know, like largely cool. Like, was like, you know, kind of like, was the energy like of the shows, like was it good, or like was it a contributing factor at all on being like, ah, like, you know, like let's chill out. Like I kind of remember, like, you know, it, I mean, I know y'all played something, what, y'all played LDB in 2020.
Yeah. That was actually, it was 2019. That's the last show we've played. I think it was February 2019.
And that looked great.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I think we just kind of always wanted more. And then we finally got to a place where we were like, this is what it is, and this is cool.
That's a great place to be in, man.
Yeah, I agree. I just think, like, we got to, like I said, we were always ahead of ourselves and, like, trying to look for the next thing or like the next milestone or whatever. And it was like, we don't need milestones. We just want to write sick shit and play shows. And that was the thing, is when we would do big shit and people weren't screaming in our faces, we had a bad time. Mm. Like, it's playing shows that don't feel like hardcore shows aren't fun to me.
Yo, I completely hear what you're, 'cause especially when you've grown up in that,
Yeah.
And then you switch over to like playing to a room where it's like people like you, but the culture is to just kind of stand around
staring at you, fucking gawking at you, like just, with a barricade and shit. And it's just
like
not having a good time.
That's not fun. Because you can't feed off that energy at all, you know?
Right.
You know, so that kind of like mends itself after, you know, like having like a hard time with disharmony. You'll Never Be One of Us, I believe, is the last Nails record to come out. Or was there something else?
We did a 7-inch after.
Oh, yes.
We did the I Don't Want to Know You's and Endless Resistance 7-inch.
And then I remember the music video, and I remember the cover of the record with kind of like the blood face.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the gory face thing.
When did that come out?
That was summer 2019.
Okay.
And then we did a tour on that.
Gotcha. All right. So you were doing things then. You said the last Switching Tongues record came out in 17, and you went really hard.
I think it came out in 18, but we started going hard in 17.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Because I'm trying to think. So that your kind of year of not doing that band was 16.
Yeah, basically, not long after Disharmony came out, we kind of just chilled.
Yeah.
And then within like, I think it was more like 9 months, we were like, okay, let's be done chilling. Okay.
When does Eyes of the Lord happen?
That actually started, technically, we did a tour with Acacia Strain, who Bruce tour managed. And we just kind of hit it off. And started emailing because he was like, these kids like this music, like talking about Troycore and shit. And then he was a fan of Twitching Tongues, and he just kind of joked one day, like, when are we starting a band? And I'm like, well, you just started it. Like that was it. And it took like 4 years. We had like a initial lineup of. Because he's good friends with Mike Stack from Dying Breed.
Okay.
And Buddy from Stigmata, we met from doing shows with Stigmata. And so it was initially going to be me, Colin, Mike Stack, Buddy, and Bruce. And it just was kind of like the logistics of it, like writing songs, it wasn't really working. So for it to happen, we kind of had to slim it down, and we just made it. Us three, and then we brought in Justin from Closed Casket because he was going to put it out, mm-hmm. and Martin playing second guitar.
Okay,
just because he's the ultimate live guitar player. Mm-hmm. And it took like after we slimmed down the lineup, we had it done within like a year. We had that first 12-inch done, and then. We just kind of played it as like a fun thing. We just played a couple shows, and then we did the LP. Bruce kind of realized he didn't really have the energy to start a new band, you know, like as a very, very grown man. So it was just kind of like, I don't know about playing live. Like, I'll write music forever, but I don't know about playing live. So it was just kind of like, then we'll do the LP. And we'll wrap it up. It's totally fine. Like, and I love that LP. That one, I think, while Twitching Tongues was chilling, that was like my writing solace in a way.
Colin told me that LP is you.
Yeah.
Like that is like what Taylor is trying brain. To hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I went back and listened to it. With that lens of being like, okay, I'm thinking about this as if I'm like this is what Taylor's trying to hear.
Yeah.
You know, so that comes out in 19?
I don't know. Let me look.
I kind of remember.
We basically put it out, and then I think it was 19 just because we played This Is Hardcore, did a couple shows, and then we did our last show, and then the fucking world went to shit.
That's right.
So yeah, I think it was 18 because, or no, no, it was 19 for sure. Because then we stopped playing. There were no shows and we played our last show in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that being all said, it's like, you know what, and you did the God's Hate record this year.
Yeah. It came out this year. What we tracked it, summer 2019, the instruments were initially tracked.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then the vocals took a good bit of time.
So you were just kind of waiting, like, were you just kind of like waiting to be like, all right, well, it looks like we can maybe play off this, so let's release it now. Kind of what was the, if you recorded it in 2019, kind of what was the, like the ideal set there?
I think it was just, Colin just kind of took a long time to put it together. Where the Eyes of the Lord record is me, the God's Hate record really is him. And I think it took a bit for him to get inspired, and then it took a bit for him to be excited about the songs. And then it was basically just kind of waiting either on him or on Nate and things like that. And Nate was so busy with wrestling that it was tough to get anything together.
Sure.
That's why, like, God's Hate hasn't played a show since, like, 2016 or 17 or something.
Dog, are you for real?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Holy,
I think the
shit,
last thing was a Terror tour.
I know Terror, Abuse of Power, and like something else I want to say.
Yeah, I don't remember what year that was, but it's been a while.
Oh,
but the new record was always kind of in the pipeline. Like, there have been demos since around that Terror tour. There were demos.
Okay.
And then, yeah, it just took a while, and vocals took a bit. And then, honestly, the pandemic, like, people call it a pandemic record or whatever, but it's not. Like, it was tracked before that, but the pandemic allowed it to be finished, I think, because wrestling slowed down so crazy. So there was nothing.
I mean, odd silver linings have come, you know, obviously more negative, but, like, you know, slowing down will allow other things to kind of occur.
Yeah.
You know, gives you more time. But you guys have shows planned coming up, yeah?
Yeah, there's a bunch. We have East Coast with Incendiary, the record release shows here.
Yep.
Texas, and then we have some Europe in 2022.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, definitely, like, little clusters of things that will feel good to play.
Is that like, I mean, like, is that like the most active thing you're doing right now, playing wise?
Yeah, and then I've been playing Criminal Instinct for a few years. And
oh, that's right.
We've always been playing stuff here and there.
Okay, so yeah.
Criminal Instinct, that's actually the only show I've played this year so far.
When did you join Criminal Instinct, and kind of like how did that come together?
I did the first LP.
That's right.
And I think, you know, me and Josiah hit it off, and we started writing the Midnight Suns record. And then there was a moment
that too.
There was a moment where I think that he needed somebody to fill in, so I filled in. And then we started, like, after we finished the Suns record, we wrote that Sweet Dreams 7-inch. Okay. And I still wasn't really in the band. I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't want you to be waiting on me for shit. But I'm down to play when I can. I'll always help write. And then it was the Terrible Things record where I was like, you know what? I'm spending a lot of time on this. I'm fucking in.
Yeah. You just reminded me of Midnight Suns as well. How did that one come together?
That one was like, it initially was after we did the first CILP, just I was like, I want to do something heavy.
Okay.
And I was really into, like, fast punk shit. So I was like, well, CI is kind of fast punk shit already, so I can't really do a ton of that. So I kind of combined his idea and mine and just turned it into a fast punk band that has heavy parts.
I see. Okay. Because it is interesting. Now that I think back at it, it's like, oh, yeah, Midnight Suns did kind of just become, I feel like, lineup-wise, a little bit what CI is now.
Yeah, and CI, it was just easier. I mean, we wanted to do Midnight Sun stuff, but it was a little difficult. And again, like, starting a new band is kind of exhausting.
It's tough.
So, you know, NCI just kept writing and doing stuff, and it got better and better, and it was easy to, that was like the easy band to play for a while because everybody was local.
When they became the CICA,
essentially. Yeah, basically. But then Rat came back, and I think we've played maybe 5 shows or something since then.
Okay. You didn't play the most recent one, though, did you?
The Tucson
one? No, the Atlanta one. You didn't play that show, did you?
Oh, I didn't play that show just because I had a recording starting the next day.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's the thing is we have a model in the band where it's like we have too many members and whoever can play shows plays shows.
It's a good model.
It works really, really well. Like we played L.A., and then another version of CI played Atlanta, like a 40% different lineup.
That's cool, though. I like that.
Yeah, it was sick.
Makes it versatile. Different versions of CI could just kind of pop up anywhere.
Kind of, yeah.
As long as your size there.
Right. CI Rat, pretty much. Those are okay. Yeah.
With him being back in. But, yeah, so, you know, like, you talk about how you had a recording session booked. You know, when did you see like a real like big uptick? I mean, you've always been recording, but like when did that really become like when did like, you know, like the pit start and you know, kind of like how did that formulate?
It's hard to pinpoint. Like I said, doing the Rotting Out Zabalba records, that created a wave, and doing the Twitching Tongues records, honestly. That created a wave where I got a ton of bands who heard those records and then came and did records. And then it did die down a little bit for like a year. And then I did some other record and it made everybody start coming back. And it hasn't really gone away since then.
Yeah. I feel like it's been pretty constant the past few years for sure.
Yeah, especially since I would say the last 5 years, there's been a big uptick in it.
You know, you can like hear a record and be like, Taylor touched this. Like you have like your recording and production has a very like distinct style to it, like a sound. What, like, you know, with, I mean, not trying to give up your secrets or anything, but like kind of like your approach with like a lot of stuff, like, what is kind of like the Taylor touch in your opinion? You know, when with how you approach these records, do you try to put a lot, like a fair amount of yourself into it, or are you going off of just like what people are requesting of you? Kind of like what's the recipe?
A lot of the time, I'm just kind of trying to capture a band, and I'll exaggerate what I feel like are the best parts. So I guess that's the only part where I'm kind of putting myself into it, where it's like the parts that I like, I'm going to bring out. Or like, you know, if the bass player is really good, I'm going to highlight the bass player. If the drummer rips, I'm going to highlight the drummer. Okay. Tone wise, I just like heavy stuff. I've always liked metal. And so, I mean, sometimes I'll get like a punk band and they end up sounding maybe a little bit more metal than they should.
Sure.
I would even say the first CI LP sounds maybe, it could have maybe sounded a little more punk. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just, I guess it's just my brain and my ears want to hear certain things, and I do what I can to get it there.
Right.
I wouldn't say there's a specific thing.
Because I notice it. It's like the CILP. That CILP is a good example where I'm like, oh yeah, it's like this isn't like the Taylor's normal style, like musically style of like stuff.
Yeah.
I hear him doing, but I was like, I know he. It's like you wouldn't have to tell me that, like you recorded. I'd be like, oh, I already know. I know that, you know, that he did this, just because of kind of like what you're talking about, like, and it makes sense. You're putting in there what your ears want to hear. So yeah. So I get that. I've always been curious about that, kind of like the through line between your stuff, and yeah. I mean, I feel like it. You know, because of that, now you're the guy when people are like, I want to do something like heavier or metallic, like that has like a bite to it. Like you're, you know, you're probably top of the list for, you know, people to go to.
That's sick.
I definitely think that. But
I guess the other thing is maybe I just like when bands sound like bands and not like a bunch of separated instruments or anything like that.
So even
like my most like clean recording will still be as glued together as I can. But like you hear like, I don't know, like deathcore shit or something like that, and you can hear all the fake triggers and all the shit.
Yeah.
And I never really liked that, even though I feel like that's what 90% of the world wants to hear.
Yeah. I mean, like that stuff just sounds entirely, I mean, it's probably talking about my ears. That stuff is just like entirely too clean sounding for me lots of the time, where it just like, all right, like, so preface this, I like electronic music, but when I'm listening to guitar music, I'm not trying to hear that necessarily.
Sure.
And that type of stuff sounds like a computer made it.
I agree, yeah.
You know? Even though it's supposed to be like guitar music. But you know, I'm trying to think here. Am I forgetting any musical project in there between Twitching Tongues, Nails, Midnight Suns, Disgrace, Criminal Instinct? Yeah, you got quite a resume, my man.
There's definitely some shit.
Eyes of the Lord.
I think that's it. That's the stuff I think about.
I'm like laughing at like how like well all those bands do. Or like have, like, it's just like thinking about it. Just because, I mean, but it's cool though. There's a reason for it. Like, you know, it's like if you got the juice, so to speak, then it's gonna come out in all the projects. Oh, God's Hate.
God's Hate, yeah.
Man,
I did that death metal thing last year.
Oh yeah, Zaus.
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing it correctly?
I don't think there's a wrong way to say it.
Okay.
Because it doesn't mean anything.
What? Okay, yeah. Where did you pull the name from?
Truthfully, there's that Japanese band Zao.
Okay.
Z-O-U-O. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be next to it on my iTunes.
So I changed
the last letter.
I fuck with that too.
Yeah.
You played on Martine's black metal project too, yeah?
Oh, I did play drums on that, and I played guitar on the Like It or Not stuff.
Damn, dude, that's right. I'm like, you know, usually put like what bands people are in on like the list here. I'm gonna put a few on there on in the description, and a heavy emphasis and more.
Yeah,
but you know, yeah, I remember that. Was that like a pandemic project, Zaus?
That was absolutely a pandemic project. Okay. Where I had like, I don't know why I thought this was that crazy, but I was like, oh man, I don't have anything for like 3 weeks. I should just write something. But really, I was about to not have something for 6 months. where like I just wrote it, recorded it, I had it out by a certain date, and then it was like April last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, oh, this is going to go way past April.
Yeah.
Like, I actually did do a second record that should come out soon.
Okay. Because I was going to ask, I was like, what's, you know, as we're kind of getting to like to current day, what's sort of on the horizon? Like, you know, like that you can talk about at least.
I have that record, which is basically like I'm calling it a mini LP. It's like 20 minutes long.
Okay.
And then Colin and I started a kind of grindy death metal band called Dead Body that was actually supposed to play our first show yesterday, but Colin got COVID last month.
That's right.
And so it kind of fucked our momentum. So we like weren't going to talk about the band because I've been sitting on these songs for like a year and a half now.
Uh-huh.
And so we were going to not talk about the band. And then we were like, okay, let's play this show. And then we ended up not playing the show, and we talked about the band. So, but it's fine. It's not like we're not trying to be fucking mystery or anything. But just didn't want to say anything until we had something to show for it.
Okay. Well, people have that to look forward to.
Yeah, those are the songs I've been working on the hardest for probably the last like 4 years, honestly.
Okay. Cool. Oh, damn. 4 years. Shit.
Yeah. Well, it was like a thought in my brain for a year or so, and then I actually it's taken like 2 years to refine fucking 20 minutes of music.
You just like grind death metal, like what are the references?
I guess to put it simply, it's probably like Morbid Angel and like a Dave Witte band.
Okay, sure.
Like a 90s Dave Witte band.
Yep. See that dude around town some.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's like one of the dudes, like the Municipal Waste guys, I don't know like as well, but he seems very nice.
He is, yeah.
Okay, so you got that to look forward to. Another Zaus record. I'm sure you're working on seven different things recording wise right now, and I'm sure more coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, I've got a few in the books as late as like April next year.
Well, the last thing I'm gonna ask you, like just as a big, you know, producer, within in hardcore and metal and everything, what if you like first thing that comes to the top of your brain, what's your favorite thing that you've ever recorded?
Shit.
I know that's a tough question.
It's usually the latest thing.
Sure.
So I will say two things. One is this death metal band called Apparition.
Ah, yes.
They're fucking amazing. And the LP I did for them earlier this year is finally going to come out in October. I'm actually going to play bass for them. I don't know if I'm going to play bass for them full time or just, you know, for a couple shows or whatever. Just because I don't want people waiting around on me to do their band. Cause it's like, my friend Miles it's his brainchild and the drummer Andrew who plays drums and sings. And, it's just psycho death metal. And I really love the record and I love how the record sounds. It even sounds a little different than I would normally do it. It's a little cleaner than normal.
Did you do their previous record?
I did their 7-inch too that came out last year.
Did you approach that differently as well?
A little bit. That one was like, oh, this is like I was like, oh, this is psycho death metal. Let me make it sound crazy. Like it's gonna sound dirty as fuck.
Yeah, that one I didn't like you're talking to me about it now. I did not know you did that one. I couldn't pick that one up. I couldn't like tell that was it was good, but I couldn't tell it was yours necessarily.
Yeah. It's a little more blown out than usual.
Interesting, sure.
And then I pitched it to Profile and Lore and they were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Sick.
Killer.
And so then he ended up doing their LP too, which comes out soon. And it's just so fucking good. It's so good that I was like, yeah, I'll play bass. You got it. And then secondly is the Age of Apocalypse LP, which is un-fucking believable record.
Yes.
It is like lyrically, musically, above most things.
When is that supposed to be out?
Don't know, and if I did, I probably couldn't say either.
Sure. Now I talk to Terry every so often. I know he's a listener. Shout out to Terry.
He's a man.
Yeah, I mean, like that. You know, like I do like what they do, and like from kind of like their 7-inch. I was like, this is gonna be a thing, like. Like I know people already like them, but I was like, no, I was like, there's gonna come a point where like they're gonna do something down the line that's really gonna like dig the nails in on people.
Yeah.
And I started kind of hearing like Colin and you talk about it, and I was like, yep, it's coming.
It's going. Well, especially because like we come from a band that, you know, worshipped Only Living Witness and like, you know, wanted to do clean vocals, and but you know, you can't just do the same shit. You have to make it a little different. Mm-hmm. And so we hit a different mark. It doesn't really feel like those bands. And they capture that feeling that you get, and while still sounding fresh, like they don't just sound like those bands in like a contrived way. It sounds like you could put their name up with those bands and it would be appropriate.
You know, maybe you said this. Did you say that they were an interesting take on Stigmata. Was that you?
I don't know, but I hear it.
Somebody said that, and I re-listened to them with that in mind, and I was like, oh yeah, it's like, this does sound like Stigmata, but just completely different vocals.
Sometimes, yeah, I guess because they do a lot of just kind of open, they ride the open note for a bit,
mm-hmm.
Which I also attribute to like Life of Agony Underground and shit like that. But yeah, I wouldn't say I pop on records as I do like all the time. Like there's a select few, but in the last few years, or like the last 2 years, besides maybe like the Section Hate LPs and the RJC LP, mm-hmm. those two I popped on for a long time, and now the Apparition and Age of Apocalypse records I like just listen to because I like.
Good. I mean, you know, I mean, again, just what you just said, your hands are in so much stuff that is just a part of like the greater culture right now. You've contributed so much to, you know, the way things sound and getting bands like your own, you know, obviously your own bands to great places and helping out others as well. You know, it's been a pleasure hearing you get, you know, how you've gotten to like the place you are, and I know that anything you're involved in the future is going to continue to be of quality.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, of course. If you got anything you want to leave the audience with, you can. If not, then you and I will just talk to each other soon.
I think that's it may have been a little jumbled, but I think we said it all.
Beautiful. All right, man. Appreciate you, you know, coming on. And, you know, I truly hope I encounter you sooner rather than later.
Fuck yeah.
All right. Talk to you later, bro.
Peace.